I surrendered my life to preach at the age of 17. When I was 19, I was licensed to be a preacher. When I was 21, I was pastoring a Baptist church. That's been almost 37 years ago. 21 years of age, I was pastoring a Baptist church. In fact, I was not quite 21 when I assumed my first pastorate, nearly 21. As I said yesterday, I was a softball pitcher. When I went to college to Marshall, Texas, we lived at 2007 North Franklin Street, and the local softball team heard that I was a softball pitcher. And so I said, one of the local softball teams, the Texas Pacific Railway, they came out of the house and they knocked on the door and I answered. They said, "Are you Jack Hiles?" I said, "Yes, I am." And they said, "We understand that you're a softball pitcher." And I said, "Well, I pitched some softball. I pitched in the 7th Army playoffs. I pitched some semi-pro ball." And they said, "We have two games left." Well, they said, "If we win, we're in 2 out of 3 playoffs for the city championship. And if we've already lost one game. We have no pitcher that can compare to theirs. We've already lost one game." And they said, "We'd like for you to pitch for us. We're allowed to have 2 or 3 players off that do not work at Texas and Pacific Railway. We'd like you to pitch for us." So they said, could you come out in the yard? I went out in the yard. They had a ball and a glove, and they said, "Pitch us a few." So I went out and pitched a few, and they said, "Hey, man, we're playing 2 out of 3 championship playoff. We've lost the first game. We lose the next game, season's over. Would you pitch for us?" I said, "I'll do it." Now, at this time, I was pastoring a little church out in the country, just a few people. I'll tell you how I got to that church in a few minutes. And so, first game we pitched, we beat them 5-0. I pitched a one-hit game, struck out of 21 batters, struck out 15, I think it was. One of the best games ever pitched, really. And we won 5-0. Then it came time for that was one game apiece, and now it came time for the big championship game. Most all the people in the city came out. It was the biggest athletic event of the city's life. And the place was packed and jammed. Thousands of folks were there for the final big city championship game. We're nothing to nothing about the 3rd or 4th inning. Game about half over in softball. We played 7 innings. Game about half over. And so one of our men hit the ball down the first baseline. Just dribbled it down about that far inside the foul line. And he ran to first. The first baseman got it and would have beaten our runner to first base. But he did beat him. But all the way, he dropped the ball. Literally dropped it out of his hand. The ball bounced one time. And as the ball was bouncing, he ran across the base. And after he had already gotten across the base, the ball bounced right back into his hands. But he did not have the ball when he crossed the bag. But the umpire was standing behind him, and the umpire couldn't see it. Umpire thought he had the ball. Umpire said, "You're out!" I came unglued. I ran out on the field, and I said, "Umpire, that man didn't have the ball when he crossed the base." "Why, you said he did too." I said, "Ask him. He knows he dropped it. He dropped it before he touched the base, crossed the base, ball bounced, picked it back up." I said, "Ask him." And the umpire said, "Did you drop the ball?" The big, tall first baseman, 6'4", husky fellow, not fat, but strong build. He said, "Umpire, did you see me drop it?" He said, "No, I didn't." Well, he said, "I guess I didn't." I said, "You know you did. I saw you drop it. Everybody in the stands, but the umpire saw you drop it. The player saw it. Everybody here, but the umpire saw you drop it. You know you did. Tell the truth." He said, "Finders keepers, losers weepers." I've never liked that scripture since. And I said, "Man,
You're lying. You dropped that ball. You know you did. He said, well, the umpire didn't see it. I guess they didn't. And I said, listen, buddy, you just wait till you get up next. I'll send you on a quick trip where the booger man lives. I'll guarantee you. And I'm not much pitcher now, but in those days I could throw a ball as hard underhanded as you can throw it overhanded. And if I'd hit him in the head, I'd kill him. Now, as fate would have it, he was the first man up the next innings of the team. Now, kids, I didn't aim at his head. I didn't. I aimed at a target about that big around. But just before I pitched the ball, the target moved right in front of his head. There he stood, big left-handed guy, 6'4", just like that. And that target moved right there. And I took my dead aim, that target, and I threw that ball. And brother, it went right toward the target. If I walked one man a game, that was my quota. And I couldn't throw as fast as others, but I could throw it where I wanted to put it. And it went for his head. Right for his head. If it hit him, it killed him. And I hoped it would. And so he took his bat and threw his bat like that. Just like that. And the ball hit his bat and dribbled down the first baseline. Now, it's about that far fair. I had to field the ball. And he had to run by it. He had decided he didn't care whether he got to first base or not, as long as he sent me to heaven on the journey. And I didn't care whether I fielded the ball or not, as long as I sent him to fellowship with the booger man as I went over there. So we collided and fought. Now, he was bigger than I was. He's about 4 1/4 inches taller. And I imagine he was 60 pounds heavier. So I had to use some extra things, such as gouging eyeballs, pulling hair, knee in the groin, such things as that, that sort of equalizers, you know, to make it equal. And you know what? We had a fight. I mean a fight. I mean a knockdown, drag out. And you know what? Our little church had chartered the bus that night. And my members, 40 of them, were sitting up in the stands, proud of their preacher, as he's gouging eyeball, kneeing in the groin, and pulling hair. And all of a sudden, it dawned on me, good night, I'm a pastor. Marshall, Texas only had 22,000 people in it. I bet you a third of them were there that night. And there's Reverend Hiles out there trying to kill a guy. Would if he could. Right in the middle of that fight, I said, hold it! Hold it! Stop it! I quit! And he stopped, and I stopped. And I put the softball in the glove, 7,000 folks watching or more. I walked out the pitcher's mound, laid the glove on the pitcher's mound, laid the ball in the glove. Walked off the mound in the middle of the city championship game. Got in my car. Drove away. A third of the city watching and 40 of my members. I've never pitched a softball game since then. Because there's something in my life that wasn't wrong or sinful that was hurting my testimony. Let me tell you a story how I got that little church. Not take long. I'd been called a pastor of the First Baptist Church. I was in college. I'd been called a pastor of the First Baptist Church of Leesburg, Texas, unanimous call. About 10 miles out in the country was a church called the Grange Hall Baptist Church. I worked at J.C. Penney Company, during after school, working my way through college, and worked at JCPenney Company. And over in the, I worked in the men's department, and the ladies' soldier department was a 17-year-old young lady, one of the best pianists I ever met, named Jean Lambert. Jean Lambert said one day, said, "Jack, our little church out in the country, Grange Hall Baptist Church, doesn't have a pastor now. We're voting next Wednesday night." Are you listening? "We're voting next Wednesday night between a Mr. Jones and Mr. Smith." No joke, that's the name. Mr. Jones, Mr. Smith. They've already candidated. "But we need somebody for Sunday to preach for us." And I told him I worked with a fellow who was a ministerial student. "And could you come out and just preach for us Sunday? We not to candidate, not in view of a call, just to preach." Next Wednesday night, after I preached on Sunday, they voted on Jones and Smith. Now, a strange thing happened. The teenagers like me. you certainly can understand why. But the teenagers like me. And they got together and pulled a coup, or a cap. They pulled a coup. And they all agreed to vote by write-in ballot. Had Mr. Jones's name here, Smith's name here, and that's all, in a little box beside the thing. And they decided to write my name in. And when the vote was taken, Mr. Jones had 19 votes. No, 17 votes. Mr. Smith had 9. And I had 27 write-in votes. That means that I was called to pastor the church by 27 to 26. The deacon chairman was furious. He owned most of the neighborhood. He was a fellow 72 years old. He was furious. He said, "This is out of order. We're not going to have any kid out here called." By the way, not one man voted for me. Only one adult lady voted for me, Mrs. Lambert, Jean's mother. And all the rest of them were the teenagers. Mrs. Lambert stood up and said, "It's not out of order. Our Constitution says anybody that's 13 or over can vote for a pastor. And a majority vote, he's elected." The 72-year-old deacon chairman, in fact, I still believe he'll be raised from the dead someday and be the Antichrist. I'm sure that many of you have deacon chairmen you'd like to nominate for the same office. He said, "Okay, you called him, go tell him." About 11 o'clock night, I didn't know all this. A bunch of folks knocked on the door. Went out there and a bunch of teenage kids. I didn't know them, except Jean Lambert. I'd worked with her. And Mrs. Lambert said, "Can we come in?" I said, "Sure." She said, "You've been called to pastor Grange Hall Baptist Church." I didn't even candidate. "That's okay." And she told me the story how the kids had gotten together and voted me in. Now, that's my first full-time church. I'd pastored a little country church I drove to every weekend, part-time. That's the first full-time church. And it was called by the amazing, resounding, overwhelming landslide of 27 to 26. All the kids. Phone rang. Midnight. "This is the chairman of the deacons, Grange Hall Baptist Church." They all sound alike. Not ours here. We have a blessed good. "But this is the chairman of the deacons, Grange Hall Baptist Church." "So, yeah, I guess you heard the kids called you to be our pastor." I said, "Yes, sir." "You going to come?" "I don't know. I've been called unanimously to pastor the First Baptist Church, Leesburg, Texas." "I don't know." "Well," he said, "I and the Sunday school superintendent, the church treasurer, want to see you out here now." I said, "Sure, you'd have to come." Along about 1 o'clock in the morning, I got out there, little white church beside the road, just a typical country church. No lights on. These three men standing on the front porch. Here I was, not quite 21. No, I was 21 now. Already pastored one church. And they said, "Come in." I walked in. They said, "Sit down on the front row right here." I sat down. And they stood up. I was sitting on the front pew, and the three of them stood up. One, chairman of the deacon board, and the owner of most of the property in the area, and most of the folks rented from him or leased from him or worked for him. And the treasurer was a former professional boxer, and the Sunday school superintendent was
well, he's an older man.
And this deacon chairman said, "Mr. Hiles, you know the kids voted you in this church, and you know I'm the deacon chairman. I don't want you. And the treasurer doesn't want you, and he won't pay your salary if you come. And the Sunday school superintendent doesn't want you, and we support this church financially, and we're here to say you will not walk in that pulpit."
You know, when somebody tells me I can't go somewhere, it creates a tremendous urge in my soul to go. I said, "You through?"
Through, and so are you.
I said, "I'm not sure God wants me to pastor this church. I have a unanimous call to First Baptist Church, Leesburg, Texas." I said, "God may lead me there. But I said, sir, if God leads me here, it'll take more than you three fellows to keep me out of that pulpit Sunday morning." What he didn't know was in the paratroopers, I took judo and karate. I can just take my hand and chop somebody's head off. Let me show you. I mean, as you walk down an alley, check any garbage can. I got deacons' heads in those garbage cans out there. Whack! Just like that. But I did take karate and judo in the army. Paratroopers. Anyway, I walked out. Must have been almost 2 o'clock. I got a little 1941 Dodge. I called her Jezebel because she was very cantankerous, wouldn't run much of the time. I got in Jezebel and drove with the little car out in the country. And here's what I did. I want you to be careful now. At 3 o'clock in the morning, I stopped the car beside a country road. I got out and I said, "I think I just better make some decisions about my ministry. I think while I'm young, I better just decide what I'm going to do." And so I got a pen and a piece of paper and began to write. And the first thing I wrote down was this: I will never let money be an issue in my ministry. They don't pay me, I'll still go. It's not the issue. I pastored 5 churches, took cut and pay every time I've changed churches. Never asked anybody how much it's going to be. Never put a stipulation of any kind of a fee on pastoring, preaching. Never have. Never will. Why? It's a principle. Kids, listen. You need to set yourself some principles that will determine. Hey, listen to me. Set yourself some principles. Turn your head to me. That will decide what you do. You don't have to. Listen, for example, it's a principle of mine that I wouldn't kiss a girl. That's all said. 2 and 2 is 4. That's principle. It's a principle of mine, and has been for years, that money is not the issue, and you won't buy me off. I wrote number 2 down. I will never let anybody tell me what to preach, where to preach, how long to preach, or how long to preach. I'll never let anybody do it. That's principle. I mean, 2 and 2 is 4. Sunrise east, sets in the west. You keep your nose out of my preaching. That's just principle. I made that decision years ago. Listen, young people, I don't have to get up on Sunday morning and say, "I wonder if I'll go to church." It doesn't matter. I wonder. Well, I know I'll go to church. Why? It's a principle of mine. I said it. It's set. I never decide whether to go to church on Sunday night or not. Never did then. Or Wednesday night. Deacon one time said to me, he said, "Pastor, about your preaching." He said, "About your..." And I said, hold it. I said, "Deacon, we build a building, you get 1 vote. We paint the walls, you get 1 vote. We borrow some money, you get 1 vote. I walk in the pulpit, you don't get no vote. None." When I first came here, 25 years ago next month, some of the folks didn't like me. I'm sure you have a hard time understanding why. But they didn't. And one time, one of the boards came and said, "Pastor, we'd like to have a meeting tomorrow night to discuss your preaching. Is that all right?" Said, "Sure, fine." "It is?" "Yeah, sure." He said it'd be at 7. Oh, that's a good time. Tuesday morning, they called me and said, "Where were you?"
I said, where was it supposed to be? He said, at the meeting last night. Oh, what meeting? He said, I asked you Sunday if you can have a meeting to discuss your preaching. I said, you can have one every night if you want to. But I'm not going to show up. I told you I'd be there. You can meet Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and around the week until Jesus comes, all you want to. But don't do your business what I preach. You know what this country needs? This country needs some old-fashioned men of God that get their messages from heaven and have no fear of man, but a fear of God to preach this is right and this is wrong. I love these kids over here. But I'll guarantee you one thing. I wouldn't trim my sermon to get their pleasure. I'm opposed to mixed bathing. I'm opposed to every kind of movie, whether it's on the screen in a theater or on the screen on your television set. I'm opposed to it. I'm opposed to girls wearing shorts in public. I believe girls ought to wear skirts. We don't have any pants worn at Howells Anderson College. I'm opposed to rock music. And I wouldn't trim one message if everybody in this room this morning got up and said, "Well, I like what you're preaching, and you can love what I'm preaching, don't you see?" It's all set. 2 and 2 is 4. Sunrise, east, sets in the west. I've got some principles by which I live. I ain't live and die by. My mama used to say to me, she said, "Son, we live in a little shack of a house with no running water and no electricity and no gas stove." She said, "We live in a little two-room shack," and she'd sit with a kerosene lamp and she'd say, "But son, we can be as pure as anybody. We can be as clean as anybody. And I want to serve notice on you, my young friends. You may not have the money other folks have, but anybody can be pure." And we need to ring the clarion call out as God does in His blessed word, "Thou shalt not commit adultery!" Like a thunder, roll decency and purity and chastity and morality. I said, 3 o'clock in the morning, not only will money not be an issue in my preaching, but nobody's going to fiddle with it. I wrote number 3 down. Don't know how this fit in. Had nothing to do with the night. I said, "I'll be a friend to my friends. And I will not require my friends to be enemies to my enemies." Now you check in with anybody that knows me. You just check with anybody that knows me. And you ask a friend to his friends and you'll get a positive answer. I've kept that. Why? It's a principle. If I've got a friend that's in trouble, I'm in trouble. If I've got a friend that's in need, I'm in need. If I've got a friend that has a need, it's my job to supply. Why? He's my friend. Number four. I will not give my loyalty to institutions. I'll give my loyalty to truth. I want to say a statement for you. I believe in going to Christian colleges. I think you're not right with God if you go to a heathen college. But I want to say this. I will not swear my loyalty this morning to Howells Anderson College. Won't do it. No way. The day will come sometime when Bob Jones University will be liberal, Tennessee Temple University will be liberal, Howells Anderson College will be liberal. Those buildings out there, we're just using them to get the truth out before the liberals take over it. We're trying to hold off as long as we can because decay is of necessity. And death is going to come. And so my loyalty is to principles. As long as Howells Anderson College endorses my principles, I'm for Howells Anderson College. But I do not think anybody ought to ever swear allegiance to any institution. You swear allegiance to truth. And you support the institutions that endorse the truth. And listen, institutions change. Truth never changes. Right never changes. Wrong. Oh, you say, "Well, this is a new age, and that means the permissive society is all right." I don't care what age it is, the Bible doesn't change. And truth doesn't change. Right is always right, and wrong is always wrong. And once in a while, somebody said, "Well, how you got those white sidewall fellows with haircuts and with girls wearing dresses and so forth? We don't believe in that." I always say this: you check your camp 20 years ago, and now you'll find you used to believe in it. Every fundamentalist in this country used to believe what we practice. You just go back to any Christian camp 20, 25 years ago, and just check the pictures you took at Christian camp, and you'll find the standards I have today are the ones that you had yesterday. But truth doesn't change. So you gave your allegiance to a denomination, it changed, you changed. You gave your allegiance to a school, it changed, you changed. I gave mine to the truth. Truth never changes. Number five. I will base my decisions only on one thing. Right and wrong. I will not figure out how something turns out to decide what I'll do. I'll do what I think is right. I don't care if it puts me in jail. I'll do what I think is right. I don't care if I lose every friend I have. I'll base my decisions on right. Those decisions, principles I set many years ago. You could do a lot worse than choose the same ones. Do right. Old Dr. Bob Jones used to say, do right! Do right! Do right! Do right! If the stars fall, do right! Do what's right. Those decisions have guided my life through these years. Money, preaching, friends, truth, and right. Young people, give me 3 minutes of your rapt attention. More than this country needs anything in the world, today she needs character. Young people of principle. I'll give you an example. In two and a half minutes, I'll be through with this. Yesterday, Mr. Mondale announced a woman to run as his vice presidential candidate. I get it. Why did you do it? I heard him say on the radio last night, she will help my ticket. And boy, I wanted to slug the radio. How dare that double-crossing crook? How dare him! Place my 4 children and my future of my 8 grandchildren in the life of political expediency. The issue is not whether she's male or female. That's not the issue. The issue is he has no right to choose somebody who has one heartbeat from the White House and the presidency of my children and grandchildren because it'll help him get elected. He needs to choose somebody that he feels would make the best president of the United States in case he died. But there's something sadder than that. America thinks it's okay. Before you get too excited, Mr. Reagan, 8 years ago, chose a liberal Republican to run as his vice presidential candidate for the same reason. And I was as mad then as I am now. And I'm furious now. I'd like to have Mondale teeth in my house fist. Now, I'm not talking about the fact she's... First place, no woman's supposed to have an office like that anyhow. I mean, the gal ought to be home making brownies. Chocolate chip cookies. Loving her husband and rearing her kids. Going to soul winning the foster club. That's not the issue. The issue is, it just seems like the whole nation, from the White House to the outhouse, it just seems like that everything is all right if it's expedient and helps make it elected. You say, you against a woman? I'll be honest with you. I'd rather have her than Mondale. I mean it. I mean, she hadn't proved she's a crook yet. He already had. She might be the best man for the job. Never has been a time in the history of this nation, never has been a time when there's more opportunity for young people to say, this is what I believe. What an opportunity. I believe it. I live for it.
taking the pulpit. Got a bunch of little sissy britches, preachers, running around the pulpit. You know, the other day I listened to the news, and they said the Methodist denomination is running out of preachers. They thought they don't know. They've been out for years. You know why they're running out? I'll tell you why they're running out. Not one red-blooded American young male wants to be a skirt-wearing, robe-wearing, effeminate, sissy preacher. You never saw. Look, it's Sunday morning. Watch me. Let us worship the Lord in the beauty of His holiness. Not one red-blooded American boy says, Mama, that's what I want to be when I grow up. Not a one. Not a one.